Love my life, love my love. Thou art the sweetness which I do see. In the thought that I love, thy days, thy name. So sweet, so sweet. Devotee knows how sweet you are. He knows who you let go. Thou art my life, thou art the sweetness which I do see, thou art my life, thou art my love, thou art the sweetness which I do see. In the thought that I love God, I taste thy name, so sweet, so sweet. Devotee knows how sweet you are. Devotee knows how sweet you are.
input equals output. Our first input is in the prenatal stage of the mother and the father. Sisters all happy living, then suddenly what's going on? Without any question. No consent is required. And then they realize the whole community is falling apart. They put into a state of emergency. You only have one motivation. You have to do it. The anxiety of not moving into a strange environment without any guidelines is the basis of all emotions. The worrying, the biggest fear is what happens if you do this to me. Now at that level, before you were thrown out, you were brothers and sisters, and you love each other and you die for each other, and you share the high heaven how much you will do. Yeah. And you will give you very pissed when you are pissed. But when you finally come to the deadline of the merging of the global, you realize only one can find. Driving instinct of survival overrides every condition of security, and then you become the greatest criminal in the universe because you don't have to beat everyone to get to it. So, survival at that level is photographic. There's no language there. It's very important. You know, the outside, that the winner is born. The loser is born. Sometimes, the ovum may have, or the ball, multiple cages. Therefore, the race begins. If the force is talking with purpose, it merges in the cage. At that level, the air, if you don't lock it with the various cages, in synchronicity or equalness, there's going to be a problem. That is a biological message throughout the entire universe. Then the greatest fear comes from who is going to knock on. At that level of the very innate quality is implanted in the atom, no greater love And even if they don't have life for a telephone, it's not the driver of the source of the heaven's travel. And therefore, the spur that not will have to slow down the merge into the way of children. And so, if they do merge on time, we have a trim, a trip that can go according to how many cases they do. Then by the pecking order of success, based upon the number of the ovum that is being used, or very ovum can be recorded, identified, thus setting up the synchronicity of the code will be both the sperm and after one. So if it's the 235th menstruation of the mother, last month, this month is going to be 236 over, sending out a signal like this. This is over 236, colors for 236, colors for 236. This is over 20, colors for 236. And the anguish of their Italian mommy starts to work at the next cow. It isn't begun, but 236 over, already signaled. For 2-3-6 in the proximal quantum, and they know from this work they are, they're this. This is a fantastic race. And all of the imaginary anguish and frustration. But when the race is narrowing down, sperm 2-3-6 might be empty, yet by the door of the band, win or lose. But then he looks and realizes, gee, he's 236. His number is up. He's being called, he's got to perform. And that's because he sonics the direct command. The intra-ear, sonically, the time has come, very nice number. Stand up. And therefore, all the survival functions of that sport generate. If there are openings in the same oval, like A, B, or C, H, then we have other progenitors forms who are going to jostle for the entrance. But 2-6 is a fellow who has not come out in the pecking order. And 2-7, 2-8, 2-9, they're going to be the runner-ups. And 2-5, not a chance, but if not killed him, he can't lose him. He's going to have to lose that. But 2-7, 8-9, they would have wanted to be the racing for 2-6 to end up the game. And in that moment, we have to be the mutual biological alignment. We are born together, like space shuttle, knocking. Then, in the 9 months process, when we're ready to find it, the first one is going to be out. And that is 2-6. Now, if these jokers don't obey the rule, and they fail to recognize their timing, then a problem is going to happen. And we look at desperate too early. From racing over 2-7 does not regulate its speed when fully well 2-6 has first option and tries to jump again out of the field of the sonics that is picking up this 2-6 on it, but it is that particular. If it doesn't align itself and it moves too fast, nature or self will be perceived. Nothing. The mother and father don't know, nothing there. But these two fellows now, they know what happened. And the day of delivery comes, you see this sign is there. But a strange phenomenon is there. They're connected. The head of one is higher than the other. The whole other body is formed. It tells the person who is working something directly. Now this is the he didn't obtain that release. And therefore, the compensatory law within the structure of nature sets everything in balance. You can see it and lock them together. Because this order, let's say A, slowed down for B. The B didn't regulate the speed, and B tried to jump to get in ahead and got locked. The compensatory law of nature interceded in the, on the behalf of A, knowing that this A's rightful right to be there in that moment. B never had a regular right to be there. So what happens? They lock. They come out and you will see A is slightly ahead of B.
A is the one that is behind it.
That's right. Right, exactly. Because that is what the compensatory law did. If you pull it for a market, so that B now doesn't have any way to be a winner out of context. So even if coming out of the room, A is still hitting the air first. Because it's ahead, it's his rightful position. Then they can measure now the biological resonance and the codes in it, and they will see. 1 is 2 seconds the speed of measurement over the other. That is becoming more of the obvious in this study. Therefore, they can now say, well, if that be the case, we can cut and have punishment, but the B will not be smarter than B. Even though the parents will want to say that in the other way, but A will always be smarter than B. That has the rightful function. The fear is in the sonics. How do you spell fear? Put a hyphen between the F and the E and what you got. Here. To a certain musical range. And what is F like?
E.
Is there such thing?
There's no such thing.
Yeah.
How does it sound? Right? It's a fact. The way you're scared, what is the sonic coming out of your voice? You ever see cartoons and the animals being chased? The sound it makes. And today, with the research going on in the RNAs and DNAs, they have fun. That sound regulates the RNA, not the DNA. And music that is highly programmed with RNA generates a lot of fear and very comfortable. And music that are geared to DNA won't do that. Two doctors were doing research on the Japanese doctor, the other is an American doctor. They are both zeroed in on the actual science of fear affecting RNA and the DNA and F. The EE kind of effect, this particular sonic does not house is like a river to steal it, a tremendous flow that is already in the house. And the stress level of growth, and the equipment that measures stress and regulates the individual to slow down, is basically a sign. Knowing that, that fear has an origin in sadness, and knowing that your own voice gets triggered by anticipation, and the enzymes in your saliva will follow the rule when this is the rule of the fear and the happiness, and the fact that you are working on the people. You have two options. That is the fear of the effect of the damage in your body, or the victim. 9 times out of 10, you may be a victim of it, because you do not know what to do with the damage. It's a damage. If somebody finds the damage, thank you for doing your comment, and you actually put in this trigger, you will act in this trigger. Panic is too difficult. It is really about fire. Panic is too difficult. Then the actual fire, or the actual bullet, panic will create more interest without the actual, than the whole of the hour. Yes, I was always talking. That panic can be an actor. How to use the panic? That it can generate panic. That's not a as an instrument that the real so hard.
And is it is an effective panic?
That's how it is in the medical capital.
The ancient man?
Developed the martial art. All you got to do is with martial art. We learn this how to develop the martial art of this life. So how to function together and not grow it or school it. But to do it in a very loving and artistic way. But you know, you've got to work your way up the ladder. First you've got to get angry before you get loving. Because if you remember, at every wedding there's a second guy who's got to watch.
There was some martial action going on in order to get the wife. This is basically art.
Masonics can't be based on any look at a situation. Panic. Let's say there's fire here. If you panic from the current fire and everybody making noise, you can run out to go and cut yourself and you're going down to where you have to be sent. But if you approach the fire in a calm way, without panic, you can more or less control how the rest of people are getting out. So if you're again fireman, control the process. It's praying not to panic. That's why life guards and all these people who are doing any kind of control service, the face of the land, the control is growing without panic. But you can't rely on the person who's going to panic.
And the evidence is showing up in non-decomposition bodies versus decomposition bodies. The ratio of carbon retention in the blood is very high in the decomposing body. And the ratio of carbon that doesn't block light is showing up in the non-decomposing body. One blocks light and the other doesn't block light. They are finding diamond crystals now in the non-decomposing body instead of finding the average carbon crystal that will block light. Dr. Rowe, in his research, when he was given the body of Yogananda, made this affidavit and said, this man is technically half dead. There's no way to validate that the body is dead. It is living. But how is it living? We are now discovering that death has two levels. The man Jesus made inference about that when he was in the body. He had a friend who was in the grave. His name was Lazarus. He was told that Lazarus was sick. He paid no attention to the sister's message, and he kept going away further from Lazarus' house. And then the message came that Lazarus is dead. By that time, the sisters are all there, said, pissed off at Jesus, because they put up him in his house and treat him nice. He would be pretty angry. But, you know, he was smiled because by his guru. But he had that stupid that to know that in your mind you're angry because he didn't correspond or really come in for people to take care and help your brother. It's a normal function. But it's not going to write it down to hurt the public. But if you're dealing with humanism, then you know it's there. But it's not something that destroys. It's something that is essential to be recognized. He turns around and goes back, and then he makes a remark about the debt after he was told about it. He says, this is not a debt unto the debt. To the average man hearing this and being programmed for centuries, would know what the hell he's talking about and would assume all kind of conditions in your head as to what it really means. And when you get to the actual physics, he knew what he's talking about. A debt, not unto the debt. Then he asked them, where is the body? And they said, Master, he's in bed. Then he goes on and says, Lazarus, come forth. Picture for one moment, you're Lazarus lying down in that coffin there, saying, man, I ain't going to get up. You haven't enjoyed this. That would be your mental reaction. You're being called forth now to come out of the grave where you look for a long time to go take a vacation. You see, but he comes out, and here is the counter comment on the situation. Father, I didn't have to say it in a loud voice, only because of the people around. This man is talking fantastic science, but in begin to be tapped until we start to work with anatomy, physiology, and electrical equipment. We see now what he's talking. Death experiences are showing up in the hospitals, where day by day you have to face the reality of people shutting down. A death, not up to the death. That means death has two functions. In the hospital it's called clinical death, when the body shuts down and cannot respond to all the mechanical gadgets to keep it breathing. It's performed and classified as clinical death. Then the next statement is terminal death. That means that the body is going to go through decomposition. And in the case of Lazarus, he was in clinical death and not in terminal death, because he was called forth from the grave and he came out. There is vast fields in the human anatomy responding electromagnetically and chemically between a clinical death rate and a terminal death rate. Anyone who has been through a death experience knows there are certain conditions going on in the body. Now, also there was a woman who was the daughter of a man called Jairus, living at the same time. And this girl was supposed to be dead. The doctors told the father his daughter is dead. He goes to the man Jesus and tells the man Jesus. And the man Jesus tells him, she only sleeps. Now, does a man know what the hell he's talking about? He can use the word sleep to a father who has lost his child? Think for one moment. I don't care how you respect the person, the terminology would have to have dynamic reaction to the laws of physics. And they scoffed at him to say that. The doctors were standing there, this guy don't know what the hell he's talking about. She's sleeping. naturally. They themselves didn't even know the depth of physics that he's talking about. Yet, he goes and he activates Zaris's daughter, telling us within the framework of physics now, of science, or the actual truth, that the child was in a terminal death or a clinical death, which one? It was in a clinical death state because it didn't breathe, right? Now, Yogananda had his teacher one day, and one day the teacher didn't move in the bed and show no signs of breathing, and he thought the teacher died. So he picked up a mirror to check and to see if this teacher really dead. Well, then you don't come out no air, you know, no fogginess from your nostrils, and you ain't moving, you're stationary like a log. Nine times out of ten, you're gonna say, well, you're dead, right? Then the man opens his eyes and says, budding experimentalist, what the hell do you want to see? That's a funny remark. Budding experimentalist, why don't you want to see? In other words, he's trying to show him there are levels of death. Then Paul comes along in his time and says, I rebuke you in your rejoicing, for I live and die daily in God. He knew what he was talking about. He's not talking terminal death. All these men are talking clinical death. Today we call it the death experience in the hospital. Clinical death is valid. It's a state where the organism can shut down, but does not go into biological breakdown or decomposition.
Is the omega state experienced in that?
Yes, but the, you have to understand the physics before you can see what the brain is doing.
I wanted to ask you something about Yogananda. I think it's in Kriyananda's book that when he was lying on his bed after his death, and with the focus of going in one by one to pay their last respect to him, the Daimata went in and was kneeling by his bed, and the tear came out from under one of his eyes, and he had it in the handkerchief. And I've wondered about that. I mean, what was the message? What was the meaning for his disciples and for those of us who are householders? So I feel like there was something more than within that story than the words. I feel like it meant something. Or was that he was saying something.
In our modern time, we have become very skeptical about the laws of nature and our relationship with the Creator. And therefore, we tend to phase out belief over specific measurement. This is because we're evolving. We don't want to be continually telling ourselves to believe in something that we don't have any evidence to measure. We feel it's not practical and it tends to generate a lot of false conditions. So realized masters who have fully realized the context of their true nature is giving scientific evidence to their students and those that are remaining that their future evaluation of what they truly are is locked up in the self. He consciously shut his body down before everybody and went into a state known as death in a clinical way. But he induced this by literally going into it. His students are there. He would have taken the responsibility to consider them as students if he had not already taken the responsibility to be one. A spiritual ideal and one who would resolve their problems, even going beyond, as you say, the teacher is beyond the mother, the father, the brother, the aunt, and all. It's the one who really feels the utmost for a human being because he is the manifested, realized being, the active God in the flesh. Well, how is this active God principle going to satisfy the little me who is so stupid and is hanging on for some kind of consolation from the human body? That creative principle is have to satisfy me in some form. So if a little teardrop rolls out of the eye in a condition known as clinical death, and this student is so engrossed with the love for the principle locked up there, not for the body itself, for the principle is satisfying that conscience, that being, with something tangible to remember. But the question comes up. The teardrop came out of the eye. Prenanda never went any further to write about it. But whenever Dayanata writes about it, she'll tell you the teardrop didn't dissolve. It's a crystal, it is the momentum of God. But she never went to write about it, she read it. So every human being who related with Yogananda had something given to them when he passed away. I can vouch for that in my own life. When I received the notification that the master had passed on, I look at that thing in the mailbox and I swear, I don't know a damn thing, but I missed my chance. I should have gone and seen this guy. What am I doing here? I really swear it off. And then I felt my eyes closed down and I tried to open it, I couldn't open it. But I heard this voice deep inside my whole body. You know it all. What more do you want? So then my eyes opened. I have never heard Yogananda's voice literally, other than from different experiences. But then, Kriyananda sends me a record of Yogananda's voice 2 months after the funeral. And when I heard the voice, I started to laugh. And my friend, the lawyer, said, oh, you gone crazy, man? From that record? I said, no. I said, it's the way the voice is talking. Because Yogananda, you hear his voice on the record, it sounded like, I, Paramahamsa Yogananda, I'm singing or I'm talking. Imagine he said to me, you know it all. I, Paramahamsa, you know it all. There's no way for you to crawl in your head to say you don't know what it's all about. The laws of physics pertaining to the truth now is becoming obvious in my head. I realized that I began to understand for the first time that none of these writings had anything to do with imagination. All the lives of these great men were highly locked into fantastic science. My job is to go back, sort it out to make it understandable so I can live with it, and not try to look for miracles or magical conditions or run from the world, hide myself on the mountain top. My brothers and sisters are living here in the muck-ups. So I have to live here. I can't run away. But it's to understand what I'm living with and to work with. So that's what he did for me. And then after, he did a lot of things. But the voice was there. I had the evidence that these men were in that state. I had to make a connection with the atomic physics. But you see, his death could not occur before the atom bomb was developed or released, in order to make scientists take a second look at the human body, not just assume that it's just a mass of flesh and it may have a soul and it comes in by some virtue of behavior. The atom and the research now is pushing us much more to the true nature that we are soul, a power that represents the Creator in living action. But we are not the Creator. That's the only difference. The Creator has become us to allow us to experience interplay called duality. Right brain, left brain. Yes, no. and merge back into the unified field, which is enlightenment. We are like the unfinished chicken inside of the egg, waiting to break out of the shell. But the chicken in the egg don't like a chicken until mama sits in it for 21 days, and then it breaks out. You ever see a hen break the egg shell to get a chicken out, or if the chicken breaks the egg shell to come out? The chicken breaks the eggshell to come out. And when I was a kid, my mother always used to say, do not feel compassion for the chicken and take off the shell while it's coming out. You're a kid. And you know, if you're a young kid and you listen to your mother saying that, you're always going to want to do what? So here the chickens, they're hatching, and I haven't got to take care of it. And I see this one crack the shell, and all the rest are already out. But this one is taking his time to come out. And so me, even my good heartedness, going to church and everything, I'm starting to feel. And the chicken isn't moving. And he remains beat up. And then my mother comes along and she sees all the chickens, she sees this one there. She said, why is this one like this? What have you done to it? He said, Mom, I didn't do anything to it. It came out of the road. She said, come on, I know what chicken did. Yes, you did something to this one. I helped peel the shell off it. Did I tell you not to do that? Or you see, you're not going to get the strength to survive? Then I started to cry. Naturally, my heart would give you like, oh, God, the chicken, what did I do? Then my father comes along and says, okay, you made a mistake. You admit it. Now, take note. What are you going to do in order to give you some understanding why you must follow instruction? So he took a coconut shell and he put it over the chicken. In my mind, I started to cry, you can die! That's your this coconut shell knocking off all the air of the chicken. And I'm crying, and I shouted, you can die, and push back up. My father pushed me aside. He takes a little piece of stick and taps the coconut shell in a sonic resonance. At that time, I had the slightest knowledge of what sonic resonance is. All I could see, he beat it the hell out of the coconut shell and he's killing the chicken with the fire against the floor here. And then he lifts off the coconut shell and lays the chicken. And this chicken became the leader of all the gang. Beat them out, push in his place, and cut his food, and he grew to be the strongest chicken in the world. And years after, I realized the science behind it. And there I see my father tapping it and try to shut off. When you don't know, you assume all kinds of things, and then you find out there's a fantastic science involved. But where do one get it? Only by trial and error, and being handed down by people who preceded us. So, coming back to the death process, it is true that we discover that we don't have a soul to save. We are soul. We're endowed with the property to save the body from decomposition, from the incorrect decisions that we've made all through our life. We gotta clean up our act. So the only lesson we've got is cleanliness is next to godliness. No man cometh unto the Father but by me. Clean up our act. Get back to the truth in the living room. And the death process is this avenue. There are two stages of death. Clinical death, terminal death. Now Jesus was on the cross. They nailed him. Through the wrist or in the palm of the hand?
Wrist.
If you know anatomy.
Through the wrist.
Through the wrist, right. So anytime you see artwork with Jesus being nailed in the palm of the hand, you know he didn't know much about anatomy. Genuine facts from the shroud, it's in the wrist because of the way the anatomy is set up. It'll take a type of nail that we used years ago in that period, what you call a chisel type or crescent tip. They would pull up the body. But normally they never nail a person to the cross. Crucifixion was primarily for guerrillas who revolted against the government and was made a public spectacle and began in the time of Spartacus when Caesar wanted to make these people an example of don't revolt against the law of Rome, and from then on, crucifixion was administered to them. In his time, he was nailed, and he was struck with a spear. He didn't die on the cross in a terminal state. He went into what is called a clinical death by saying, Father, into thy hands I commend my spirit. Consciously shutting down the organism and going into what is known as a clinical death state that would not indicate breathing. Now, Joseph of Arimathea wanted to take the body down because it was Friday afternoon, the next day is Sabbath, so normally it would be very difficult for them to do that on the Sabbath. So he requested from the centurion to get the body down because he said he's dead. The centurion couldn't believe that the man could die because they know the body doesn't go off that so fast. So he sent somebody to check. And the person he sent in those days, today they call him a sapper, one who probes the dead body to find out if it's living, because many soldiers at that time, when they're marching through, the enemy pretended to be dead. And when they passed, they would stab them in the back. So they made a precautionary act to prevent that happening in their legions. They would have these guys who would come along and probe the dead bodies to make sure they were doubly dead and not playing dead. So he sent that man to check if Jesus was really dead on the cross. When he went, all he's looking for is two things. A grunt that will tell you he's alive and he's taking it, or a yell from the pain of the penetration of the spear, and then he'll finish the job. See? You know the person is alive. If he's really dead, he don't make any sound. If he's not dead, he's going to make two sounds, a grunt or a yell. He pushed the spear, and they said blood and water came out. But he made no sound. That was more important to the man who was doing the test, because the man who was doing the test is not a doctor. He's not trained in anatomical makeup of what the body's supposed to do. And all he's concerned is, did it make a grunt or cry out? That's all he's going to go and report and tell the centurion, right? So when he did push the spear, no sound came out, no grunt. He was satisfied with that. So he did. When in actuality now, blood and water came out, indicating that the body is in its state of terminal or clinical death. Which one? Clinical death. That's correct. The body was in a state of self-induced clinical death, because it says, Father, into thy hands I command myself. The creative consciousness switched down the mechanism. You know that as the borderline state between delta into omega, when the brain switches into that part. They take the body down, they put it in the coffin, and in 3 days, it came out. Now, to ensure that the body's not going to walk away, they put a big rock. You can see how these people were taking precaution of not being fooled, let alone happening to something like that. And the rock was rolled away from inside. Not from outside, because nobody could come and push away the rock. And then, out stepped out the manifested body. Evidence of transcending clinical death by its own creativity. Therefore, man is so creative intelligence called the Christ. That principle is locked up in us. Seek ye first the kingdom of God, which is within you, and his righteousness, and it will free you, free men all, Lord of yourself. He demonstrated once and for all that power is locked up in us. Modern physics is now zeroing in on a lot of the things about the possibilities of the body. So, to live to die
is selling the cells short. To live the live is respecting it for what it was intended to be. It is soul. It doesn't have a soul. It is soul. Which is its actuality now, technically speaking, it's living soil. But the word soil don't imply dirt. It implies that the 144 elements that make up our manifested universe is incorporated into a livingness, because God is of the living. Creative intelligence is of the livingness and not of the what?
Dead.
Powdered state. The petrified state. The terminal state. And if you're going to start a new universe, you have to start it from what state? Petrified state. To activate it again to make it function. So thus you are, thus you left. This is when we don't relate to what we are, then we phase off into a terminal state. But all your great men who have demonstrated, and the measuring test is death, all went through a clinical death. This is now, to him that overcometh, I will not send for the second. If we overcome clinical death by applying our divinity, which is soul quality in us, and accepting to live, and not to live to die, then we don't go forth a second time to experience clinical death. And there is no terminal death either, because you're a permanent pillar in the house of the world. We see that in a caterpillar emerging into a butterfly. So butterfly did it before us. Think of that. A caterpillar is like our large intestine. We came here to eat a lot and clean up. The butterfly came and ate, cleaned up as a caterpillar, and emerged out as a butterfly. Over the years, I've squashed up a lot of caterpillars, and they're rotted. But to this day, I've squashed butterflies that never saw rotten milk. Non-decomposing principle or soul nature is locked up in the human being, in the DNA, but not in the RNA. In the RNA, you have decomposition. You need oxygen to transcend the decomposition. The DNAs lose oxygen. The RNAs don't. So you have physics now to back up a lot of the laws going on in the human body. The ancient men call that the kundalini, or the awakening of the internal forces. They spoke agricultural language. They were all accurate as observing and identifying the parts of the mechanism that could do the job. Modern science has come along and has validated and only used modern terminology to say, yes, we do have these endocrine systems, we do have this helix, but it's one of the two that will provide decomposition or non-decomposition. RNA will provide decomposition. DNA will provide non-decomposition. Therefore, the pull between the two is placed in us to obey or to revolt. An RNA revolts. A DNA doesn't, it obeys. That's why Jesus said, before he gave up the ghost, not my will, but thy will be done. The creative consciousness is locked up in the DNA. The ego reaction is locked up in the RNA. You can muck it up. You can type it. Or you can surrender to it and let it come to you. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Now I have to say, We have a butterfly basket over here for anyone who'd like to make a contribution for tonight's sex
in.
And that's the RNA in you. And then you'll feel that you let yourself down and you want to do it at a later date, but you want to find out if it's sure that you should do it at a later date. That's the DNA in you. In all truth. Whenever you sit down to meditate, even if it isn't a time that you find appropriate, and our time is not going to be appropriate because of certain obligations or frustration, that is going to be there. Don't feel threatened by it. The fact that it's more important that you do take time out in 24 hours, wherever it is, to get some integration with yourself. So there are times I could not sit down to meditate between 3 and 5 in the morning. And the only time I had any opportunity was around 1 to 2 in the afternoon. And where I lived at the time, I live in a sub-basement house where the road, I can see like that glass, where that beam is, was the road. And the streetcar in Canada was running over it every 15 minutes. So you know you got no time and no place to go meditate. So I have to make up my mind once and for all. That's my confrontation, that's my devil, what I want to call it. I have to find time to go in. And not all possible, because I work at different hours of the night, okay? It's not always possible to get done. So finally, I came to the conclusion, what is more important? I wrote the organizer, what is more important? I don't have to. You know what the answer is? The least you have done unto one of these, you have done it unto me. And that was his answer. Meaning, the least time you spend just to look inside, you have synchronized with your created nature. So that is more important that you did this. Now, we call that income breath. Because you pay income tax to Uncle Sam. He doesn't take all your money. He takes a portion of it, right? So God isn't going to take back all his bread from you because you didn't love him last night. So if you spend a little second or a few minutes just to close the eyes and feel his presence, this is a way of giving back what belongs to God. Then it will increase its own. And later on, what was funny, and the more I was able to get the time, the sound of the streetcar never bothered me. I was amazed one day, I was sitting there, the streetcar is running, and it was like in a distant area. This audible live stream that was permeating my mechanism that held me together became so loud, it shut down the sound of the streetcar. Now I walk around out of life. It's always there. It's because I had to work. What I didn't know, I pushed my brain way down into delta level. And I was in that state for a long time. And I never realized I was in it because I had no way to measure it at the time. The machine wasn't developed at the time. It's when I was standing in Dallas, waiting for a Swami to come to the building to give a lecture. But I can feel this man long before he ever came in the airplane that he was coming early in the day, but I couldn't go see him or meet him in the plane, but I could feel his connectedness with me. And when he arrived at the building that night at 7 o'clock from the lecture at 8, he stood at the door and there were over 350 people. He looked all around and he started walking straight to me. Everybody moved away. And he came right up, he said, I'm going to make this Swami right now. Well, that blew my ex-wife's mind. What the hell is he? That makes me the Swami. But he performed the ceremony right there, touching the head, and gave me a Swami name. Then he said, sister, I'll make you a Swami. And he did the same thing for him. Because he recognized I was able to go down into the Delta level for a minimum of 15 minutes. and to shut off the resonance of your breath. And that's what is basically like. When you can go in and then phase down the sonic resonance of your finger on you. Yeah. But don't quit. And no matter how long it takes, and if you don't find that you want to be consistent, don't let that hurt you. Most importantly, go for the prize. The prize is 15 minutes in Delta.
Don't you fall asleep first.
Yeah, that's not
45 minutes.
Go for it.
Everybody, Elliot and I, on Friday nights at our house, I don't know if you got the letter from John, we have a meditation, and if anybody wants to come, fine, it's at 8 o'clock Friday nights. And if you need the phone number or how to get there, you can ask me. One thing on the letter that John sent, it said 109 North Humphreys. It's 309. It's between Cherry and Dale, right across from the tower on the Catholic Church.
One question.
Number 109 is my house in Houston.
Ah.
So that's the only place I'm
here. Ken, about how long does that usually last?
We usually meditate probably 40 minutes to an
hour. Okay. All right, yeah. I have to give a fair indication when I come back.
Yeah, right.
Okay, thanks.